So we always sat next to each other, and I came in one day, and I had bought a 12-step workbook at the bookstore, and it was in my bag. And I set my bag down, and he's like, what is that? What book is that? And I was like, it's the 12-step workbook. I said, I feel like I'm going to have to sponsor myself, so I want some guidance. And he looked at me, and he goes, I'll be your sponsor. And I looked at him. I was like, what? I thought we couldn't do that. He's like, you've got to have a sponsor. I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it was one of the best days of my life.
I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. I am so excited with the guests that we have today, and I wasn't sure that this was going to happen, mostly because I can't get dates right, and there's so much going on both of our calendars. My guest is Angela Pugh. She is the founder and host of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. It's a nationally ranked podcast that offers coaching strategies and guest interviews on how to live sober and happy. Angela is also a master coach, a national speaker, a recovering alcoholic, and an entrepreneur. She is somebody who cannot do a desk job. We just had that conversation. She has been sober since January 7th, 2006, and she has helped thousands of people over the years to understand recovery and create easy plans to get from drunk to sober. Angela, thank you for joining me on the Sober Friends Podcast.
Hi, Matt J. Thank you so much for having me. I really loved listening to your introduction. It was really good.
You know what I did? I'll give you a secret. I went to Bing AI, and I said, give me a good introduction for Angela Pugh. And that's
no,
what it spit
not
out.
Your introduction of me, your introduction for your podcast.
Oh, that was on me.
Yeah, your introduction for your podcast is awesome. I already knew all that stuff about me.
I would hope so.
That's not fascinating to me at all.
But isn't that creepy that I could just put that into Bing and it comes back and just spits out, this is all you need to know? And it's like, it's all correct.
Yeah. Have you used AI a lot, like in your podcasting world? Yeah. It really changes things. It's been pretty fun to utilize in a lot of ways.
I overused it. So I was using it to create episode titles and episode descriptions, and I was really leaning into it. And then I noticed some of the downloads went down, and I'm like, I think I'm over processing this. Let's go a little simpler again. I'm like,
But I will say it definitely will give you a good starting point, you know, because when you have to write all of these things, people probably don't understand how much writing is involved in podcasting, but you do. You have to do show notes, titles, descriptions, all of those things, the intros, the outros, your calls to action, whatever you're promoting. Like, it's a lot, you know, and to at least get a starting point, because you can't. You're not always in your most creative mind, you know, like I don't sit down and write like a professional advertising copywriter. So
no,
it's nice to have some help.
Sometimes I listen to this podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet Bharara. And at the end of his podcasts, he goes through his whole crew, and it's like, it feels like 10 minutes of, this is my producer, this is my editor, this is my executive producer, this is the engineer, these are the people who wrote this. I'm like, well, I could get that done too if I had that crew and it wasn't just me doing everything.
Yeah, there are a lot of podcasts. I used to wonder that in the beginning too. Like, I would look at certain podcasts and I'm like, well, how have they only been around like a year and they're functioning at this level, right? Like, how does that happen? And then you realize they just had a budget to work with and they got to hire out all of the things instead of like me stumbling through learning every piece of everything on my own and doing it alone.
But doesn't it feel good that you're ranked? You've got a pretty big podcast. And you know it's all you.
Yes.
That's not easy.
Yeah. I know. And it doesn't, you know, the podcast world isn't fantastic at telling you if you're doing well or not. You know, there are a lot more tools now, but even my podcast isn't that old. What am I, five? I think 5 years old. And back then, even, there was no way to really know, is my podcast doing well? Like, you look at your downloads every month. It's like, I don't know if that number is good, if it's not good.
Right.
I don't know if I'm bottom of the barrel or if I'm knocking it out of the park. All I knew is that my numbers continued to go up every month. Like, my first year, that was all I cared about. Just every month, my downloads were a little bit higher. So I kept going. But now there are more tools for sure. And podcasting is studied more and it gets more fun, but it also gets way more complex.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the whole video and stuff, which is not my favorite thing, but you gotta do it. But all the little things to market, that's the hard stuff. And when you're saying, I don't know if this is doing well. I don't know if you're like me, but the whole thing of you talk into a mic, you record, you have a guest, but is it just, are you the only one actually listening to me? Like, you and I are having this conversation and we're talking into a void. That's the hard part of, like, are you listening to this? Do you get something out of this?
Right.
Can you please just reach out and said, I like this, or I hated it.
That's what I was going to say. And like, it's so hard to get feedback. And I think everybody's busy, right? This has been a great lesson for me, like being a podcaster and seeing how hard it is to get people to tell you has made me a really fantastic feedback person. You know, now I'm like, everybody I work with, everybody I hire, I'm happy to fill out the surveys and do the things, because it's so important as a business owner in any capacity. You have to have that feedback. And yeah, you just have no idea. You're exactly right. It's like, are you listening? Are you getting anything out of it? Like, we talk and have a great conversation, but that doesn't mean it's valuable to anyone else, right? And how do you know?
I don't know if you're like me. I think the only thing that I kind of go on is, what's the conversation that I want to hear that I'm not hearing? And that usually, if I go with that way, and like, well, I wanted to hear this conversation, nobody's doing it, I'll do it, that's my idea of what should be on the air. And I will tell you, I have those, and those are the ones that don't do great. And then I have those conversations of like, that's okay. And then they go off the charts. So sometimes I don't even know.
I know. It's so weird. Like, I had an episode I put out probably late last year, and it was like, I thought it was garbage. I was like, gosh, I do not feel good about that. But I kind of recorded it at the last minute. I had to get it out, you know, to be on time and whatever. So I didn't have time to redo it. And I really did not feel good about it. And it's one of my most downloaded episodes. I'm like, really?
Always.
Yeah. Like, it's hard. And it could be so many things. It could be the title. It could be the description that draws people in. Maybe it was good SEO, whether you knew it or not. You know, you just never know.
Right. Well, let's talk about you. You've got a little bit of a story to tell. I'd love to hear a little bit about your story, but you have an unusual arrangement with a sponsor, which is usually, if you go to any AA meeting, they say, don't do it. Well, they don't say don't do what Angela does, Buzz, but don't do what you do. So take us 100%. Where you want to start with this.
Well, I'll tell you, it is. I definitely did things. I made a couple of choices that were somewhat taboo. Definitely against the grain. It was not intentional. My experiences were just a little bit different. You know, I had been exposed to different things because I was also a bartender, which is way more popular now to be a sober bartender or cocktail server or whatever. But when I got sober, that wasn't so popular. However, for me, I had lived in Los Angeles all my 20s as a bartender. So I was exposed to sober bartenders and cocktail servers and club owners, you know, like to me, it just wasn't that weird. So that was one thing, you know, when I first went in the rooms that people would say almost every day, at least one person would be like, you know, the line, well, if you hang around in the barbershop long enough. And I was like, well, I'm definitely not drinking at a barbershop. I can promise you that. But I'm not, if I'm going to drink, it's not being behind the bar.
Around some AA sayings that some I like and some that I'm like, come on. And that's one of them that kind of drives me nuts. That I think it is possible. It's not something I would want to do because of the booze. My issue is drunk people. I don't like being around drunk people. That's my trigger.
But here's the deal. Inert. But here's the thing. And this is how it was in LA, right? When you have a really great bartending job, which there are a lot of, but when you get to really high level stuff, high volume nightclubs, things like that, those are coveted positions, right? And if you get something like that and you're making a ton of money and those jobs aren't easy to come by and you don't have other options, right? You're not quitting your job just because you have to quit drinking. You're just going to figure it the F out, you know? And that's the position I was in at 33 and a half. I had to get sober. I had no skills. I'm feral. I'm not domesticated. I can't have a regular job, right? I had no education. I had never done anything. So what was I going to do, you know? And I was willing. I will say I was willing. If I had to quit my job, if it bothered me, I was 100% willing to quit. And I was like, I'll give up my place and my car and whatever. If that's what it takes to stay sober, I'm down with that. I'll move in with my mom if I need to. But I didn't feel tempted. I was very done with alcohol. When I quit, I was done. I was so grateful to be done. I just wanted no part of it. So I went to work. It didn't bother me. I was also very open. Everybody knew I was sober. I had a pretty crazy rock bottom moment. So nobody was surprised when I quit drinking. They were surprised when I finally came out and said, I'm not just taking a break, but I'm quitting forever. That was a little bit of a shock. But everybody was totally supportive. You know, they started bringing me cupcakes to celebrate my months of sobriety. I would go to AA at noon and then I would go to work at 5 and tell everybody what I learned in AA that day, you know, because it was so exciting to me. So it just, I had the exposure to sober bartenders, so it didn't seem weird to me, but I definitely caught some flack for it. And the other thing I did against the grain was I had a male sponsor. And I didn't enter into that quickly or easily. I knew literally probably my first week sober, my first week at what is still my home group to this day, I knew he is who I wanted to be my sponsor. I couldn't wait to get there every single day and let everybody know I was still sober. I loved his connection to the program and his knowledge of the book and the principles. I loved that he really did put it into play in his regular life. And he had this really fantastic regular life too. And I think that's something with sponsorship that people forget about is like, you want somebody that you want what they have, right? But yes. That doesn't just mean the sober part. Like, I don't want somebody that can sit in the rooms and quote the big book, but then they're going out in regular life and they're a schmuck, right? Like, that's not who I want as my sponsor. So I just had a lot of respect for him as a person and as a human, as a sober person, how he shared his sense of humor. He was very on par with me. He was pretty tough, which I also needed. And I knew that's who I wanted to be my sponsor, but he didn't become my sponsor till I was almost 10 months sober. And I think he kind of vetted me, really. I mean, he didn't know I wanted him to be my sponsor. I never said that out loud to anybody, especially once I started hearing women work with women and men work with men. Once I started hearing that, I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just be quiet and I'll just figure it out as I figure it out. And I thought I couldn't have him as my sponsor, and it just worked out that I got him.
What made him say yes then?
So I didn't ask him. We used to, our speaker meeting was Saturday nights, right? So I would see him in meetings every day at noon. And then the Saturday night speaker meeting, we all go and we do the speaker meeting and we go out to dinner afterwards. And he and I would always sit next to each other in the speaker meeting. And he was one of the founders of my home group, right? So he's like the grandfather of the whole situation. He's super involved. He's got his hands in everything. He's the go-to guy. So we always sat next to each other, and I came in one day and I had bought a 12-step workbook at the bookstore and it was in my bag. And I set my bag down and he's like, what is that? What book is that? And I was like, it's the 12-step workbook. I said, I feel like I'm going to have to sponsor myself, so I want some guidance. And he looked at me and he goes, I'll be your sponsor. And I looked at him. I was like, what? I thought we couldn't do that. He's like, you've got to have a sponsor. I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, oh my gosh, like it was one of the best days of my life.
So this was sort of a, so this is not somebody new in sobriety. He's got some miles. And yes. he helped found a group and was looked at as one of the leaders of the group.
Yes, for sure. So
I totally get that he saw somebody in need. And he must have seen something else in you that up and beyond of, well, somebody's got to sponsor this person. They're wayward. No, this is not a wayward person, but she's taking on too much. And there must have been some level of connection. So I don't know. I think that gives some credibility if it's that well-respected old-timer in the room. That is going to give you some credibility. What kind of flack did either one of you get, or both of you?
Oh, my gosh. A ton. You know, there are always these people in the rooms. I think every big meeting spot has them for sure. You have these people that just sponsor a ton of people, you know, and my sponsor was one of those guys, right? He had a ton of guys that he sponsored. Everybody really liked him. And then we have those women too, right? Like the female that's been around 15, 20 years that has, you know, 25 sponsees and there is sort of an expectation as a new female in the room that you're just going to gravitate to one of those women. And we had two of those women in my group, and they were both pretty mad at me that I didn't gravitate toward them. And really treated me pretty poorly, to be honest. And there was a little bit of bullying. I'm just not available for that. Like, I didn't really care. I was like, whatever, dude, like, get on with your life, because I don't have time to mess with you. I have a whole entire life to rebuild. I have to stay sober. Now I've got step work. Like, I can't play the game right now. But one of them, I'll tell you, is still pissed to this day, and I'll be 18 in January.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And they definitely shunned me a little bit. And I think, you know, like my sponsor said, so we met up, you know, after that night that he said he would be my sponsor, you know, we have a meeting and we had very clear rules and boundaries. You know, our church where our meeting is also his family's church. So he said, we will always meet at the group in public. There will never be any question what we're up to. You won't come to my house. I won't come to your house, right? Like we do with other sponsor-sponsee relationships. Like we have to be mindful. He said, I don't ever want my family to question anything, and I don't ever want anybody to question anything and take it to my family. So we're on the up and up. This is how it goes. I was like, fantastic. I'm down with that. But for me, it was just, I was so grateful that he was even open to it, right? Especially as an old timer, that he was even open to doing it. And what he said was that he saw me show up every single day for my recovery. He's like, obviously you're doing this thing. Obviously you're serious about it. You know, when I was 3 months sober, I booked a sober cruise. You know, like I knew I was staying sober. There was no question. Like I was planning my life at that point.
You sound really bought in from the beginning.
Yeah. And not necessarily to AA 100%, but I was sobriety for sure. And,
right.
And all those people, I went to those rooms. I loved AA, and I went to those rooms and all those people were doing it and doing it successfully. And one of my first things in my first week there, I had a little mental note with my sponsor, and there were two other guys there that I just adored, and they were there every day. And I was like, oh, okay. So Jim J had like 30 years when I got sober. He was already 30 years. My sponsor was like 18 or 19 when I came in. And I'm like, huh, they're here every day.
Yeah.
Like that is something to pay attention to. And they had these beautiful lives, and they were so happy and vibrant and funny and fun. And that's what I bought into.
That's the thing that I look at for successful sober people that I'm interested in or want as a sponsor. I don't want to just see, how do you perform in a meeting? How many right. meetings do you go to? How dedicated to GSR or an area meeting and stuff are you? It's, what have you taken from this, and how has your life improved? Because in the end, and there's so many people who miss this, in the end, AA is a method for getting sober so that you can live your life well. Now, part of that is behaving well in an AA meeting and sponsoring people and sharing the message and doing the steps and doing all of that stuff that happens in the church basement. I want to see how you can take that and not be a miserable prick out. And I do see some miserable pricks out there who might have lots of sobriety, who go to a meeting every day, but they don't have a family and they're kind of grumpy. That's not what I want. I want to see somebody, how did you do this and how are you balancing all the stuff that happens in life? That's important to me.
Amen. Yes. Yes.
So it seems like this is not as scandalous as you might think. Although it's not recommended for many very good reasons not to have an alternate gender sponsor. The two of you did this for the right reasons. And there were some significant boundaries, which I think is what's so important.
Yeah, and I do want to touch on all the reasons it's not recommended, right? Because I agree with all of them. You know, looking back now, knowing everything that I know today, I understand 100% why the suggestion is not to do that. Because when we come into sobriety, we are broken, right? We have boundary issues. We're codependent. We definitely have issues with interpersonal relationships, romantic relationships. None of us do that well. You can have 100 years sober and you're still not going to do that particularly well, right? There are challenges there. So when you bring somebody in as a newcomer who struggles with boundaries and self-esteem and you're completely lost in your life and overwhelmed and you're like a deer in the headlights every day, like, holy shit, what am I doing? How is this going to work? How am I going to do this? You've got to rebuild your whole freaking life from the ground up a lot of times, right? And then you connect with someone who you respect and admire and you want to be around that person, right? And if they still have some boundary issues or some sex addiction or love addiction, which almost all of us have, yes, some level of those things, right? Yeah, it's a terrible idea. But to me, it also wasn't any different than I worked with a girl for a little while who was gay. And I was like, well, that's not really a different dynamic either, just because she's a girl and I'm a girl. Right? That could be just as unhealthy if we want to get unhealthy with it. I can make almost anything unhealthy if I want to, you know? So I would never recommend anybody, certainly new, I would never recommend somebody do an opposite sex sponsorship situation because there are a lot of challenges. I just knew I was okay with it because I don't have a problem with boundaries. Certainly with men being inappropriate, that is something I can handle very well. So I just wasn't freaked out by that. You know what I mean? I was like, if I have to put this dude back in his lane, I will. Like, that's fine. But yeah, it worked out. I also was raised by boomers, men, where there's, you know, a fair amount of narcissism and a huge amount of misogyny because that was just the acceptable way to live when I was young. So I had already dealt with a lot of those components that you might be up against and that might make you more passive. For me, just kind of made me more angry. So I just didn't fear being in those uncomfortable situations. But it also put me in a place too that I needed a strong male leader because that's what I was conditioned to follow, right? So it had to be a man for me.
We're often told that we're not terminally unique.
Mm-hmm.
In hearing your story, it sounds like there are some preconditions here where doing something a little bit more unique is actually the more healthy thing. That based on your upbringing, based on the strong boundaries that you're going to come in. I guess I didn't know you were an ass kicker. Now that I'm talking to you, I'm like, you're going to kick someone's ass if you get crossed. And I really admire that it seems like all of these things are in your favor and it was the right male. And the fact that he had credibility, I'm going back to these women who shunned you. There is a principles over personalities. And for anybody to shun somebody who's brand new, that is such a wrong thing to do. You have to lead with empathy. If there's something you don't agree with, ask a question, but lead with empathy around, well, why are they doing this? And it's not about, well, I'm the woman here, I should be everybody's sponsor of the new lady who comes in. That's the wrong way to think about it.
Leave with a little bit of empathy. That's my fear, is that I push somebody to go out and give this up and they drink and they die. I never want to be that person.
Yeah. And I think that the program can shun in different ways without realizing it.
Yes.
Right. You know what I'm saying? When people, like, I had plenty of people on the religious aspect of it. You know, this is one of the biggest things you hear about 12 steps. People are like, well, I'm not religious. Well, I'm not religious either. But listen, I'm a grown up. Nobody can make me go to church. Nobody can force me to believe in God, right? Like, you have free will. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. But in a room full of people, there are going to be people that that's their belief system. And I love that too. I will always respect those people. But you'll get the person that's like, do you believe in God? Hey, Angela, I just wanted to ask you, do you believe in God? Would you like to go to church with us? And I was like, and I've had this happen a few times, like, oh my gosh, no, I don't. I so love that for you. And thank you so much for thinking of me, but that's just not really my thing. And then I get the like look and the sigh, like, like,
oh,
I'm doomed. Yes, right? Like, I'm doomed. Like, that's shunning. That is shunning another person and making them feel unwelcome in a room where they should always feel welcome. You
it
know,
it did make me uncomfortable early on. People would just come up to me and say, do you have a higher power?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how to answer that right now. That makes me uncomfortable. And I get where you're going with that. But I felt the
same way about the sponsorship, right? Because that's another one. Do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? Have you gotten a sponsor? Are you working with a sponsor? And I was like, I will work with a sponsor when it's the right time. I was so painfully immature, as so many of us are, walking into those rooms. And we're also very defiant. And a person to me that seemed like an authority figure was not welcomed in my life, right? I've been on my own since I was young. I take care of myself. I make my decisions. And I just was like, I don't need somebody telling me what to do. So I knew I would get a sponsor when the right situation was the right situation. I just wasn't freaking out about it like everybody else was, you know?
What put you in a position where you were so sure you were done? That, nope, I'm done. I don't have to worry about this. Because I'm really curious about that. Like, you seem so definitive from day one, and that there was no second guessing it.
You know, part of it was just the fight leading up to that point. Like, I was so miserable, especially the last couple of years of my drinking. I was so miserable. And I hated myself. And I knew that I needed to quit drinking, but I had no idea how to make it happen. So it was that thing that I thought about and I just kept putting it off. Like, someday, I know it's inevitable. Like, someday I'm going to have to do this. But I was scared, right? And I was also comfortable in my misery. Like, there's comfort in the predictability when you know how your day is going to go and you know how it's going to feel and you know how miserable it's going to be. That feels a lot better than everything being unknown. So you just keep putting it off and putting it off. So by the time the shit hit the fan, I mean, I had quite a rock bottom moment, right? And by the time I got there, I was just so grateful. Because it took the choice away. Like, it wasn't up to me anymore. It just wasn't an option. Drinking is no longer an option. And I was like, thank goodness. Like, now I don't have to continue this battle in my head of should I, shouldn't I, am I, aren't I, will I, you know, it just was so much every single day. So I just was so grateful to be done with it.
I had sort of the same thing. Nobody told me to stop, but once I decided I was done, I was going to be done, and mostly because I didn't want people to then say, well, you said you were an alcoholic. Nah, I guess I'm not. I didn't want to be a hypocrite. And I never thought it was an option to relapse. So when I saw people relapsing that I came in with, it blew my mind that I couldn't understand how it happened. I just didn't see it as an option for me.
Same, 100%. And you know what, too? I got angry. I was angry when people were relapsing because I didn't understand it. And I would sit in meetings and it'd be like another, you know, step one meeting, somebody relapsed. And I'd be like, damn, people, like, I'm a bartender and I'm not drinking. Like, what is happening here? It was so baffling to me. And of course, I was so naive. Like, I didn't know anything about anything back then. Like, now I get it. And I get how hard it is. And there are so many layers. And everybody has different experiences and different traumas and different mental health stuff. Like, there's just so much that goes into it. But yeah, I wasn't drinking. You couldn't have paid me $1 million to drink. I had this visual in my head, and I say this to my clients all the time. I'm like, listen, alcohol is not going to chase you down the street and force itself in your mouth. You have a lot of control in this situation. When you lose control is when alcohol hits your mouth. But before that, you've got a lot of power. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made to get to the point that you have alcohol in your hand and then in your mouth. And all along that journey, you have the option to make a different choice. So for me, I was like, well, it can't get me, right? Like, it's not going to force itself on me. So like, I'm good. If I feel like drinking, I got to figure out something else to do. It was so simple to me. Thank goodness, because if it was challenging, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Booze is always going to be an arm's length away, no matter what. It's not going away. There's going to be liquor stores all over the place. There's going to be bars. You're going to go to restaurants where there's booze. You have to find a way to coexist with liquor. And if you have the right mindset and you're doing the work, it should be inert. It should be just another object there. Because if you really want to drink, you're going to find a way.
Absolutely. And you know, like, it tried to kill me. It literally tried to kill me. And I really like you too. But if you tried to kill me, Matt, I wouldn't hang out with you anymore either. You know, like, it literally was just that simple for me. It tried to kill me and make it look like an accident. And we can't be friends anymore.
Absolutely. So I hear you talk about you didn't have schooling, you didn't have skills, you were a bartender. How do you have the confidence to then go into business for yourself? Being an entrepreneur, trying to help other people, that would be a struggle for me.
I mean, it's a journey like anything else. I am feral, right? I'm not domesticated. So I knew it really wasn't an option for me to have a job. I did have one job one time, like in the regular world. And you and I talked about that a little bit before we hit record.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a successful endeavor for me. I did it. I was good at it. I learned a lot, which was really cool, you know, because I want to know everything. There's nothing on the planet that I don't want to learn. So it was fun to kind of do that and be in that world for a little while and see how it worked. And I had a lot of autonomy in that job. Otherwise, I would have never lasted as long as I did. I think I was there like 4 years and I was in college at the time. So for me, it started with intervention, right? That was the first piece of business that I started building, was as an interventionist, and which is challenging in my city because I live in a city that is definitely not a destination spot. It's not like people are flocking to get here for treatment, you know, like Florida and California.
Right.
And my city also is very behind. So until recently, we didn't even have a lot of treatment in my city, right? So all of those addiction resources and jobs and things that are so fluid everywhere else just didn't even exist in my city. So I had to really be out. You know, I was going to conferences. I used to do a conference a month somewhere around the country, meeting all the treatment center people and getting my name out there. And I remember at one particular conference, like, I was sitting at one of the dinners where there's like 30 people at the dinner, right? Because all the treatment centers take everybody out to dinner. And I'm looking on the table, and when I was going in, because I'm a total introvert, right? I have horrible social anxiety, just like everybody else. Yeah. So I'm going into this dinner and I'm thinking, like, I'm going to be sitting at this table with CEOs and all of these therapists with master's degrees and PhDs and doctors, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to pull this off? And of course, I was quiet because I'm an introvert. So I was just sitting there kind of taking it all in and listening to the conversation. And it dawned on me that everything they were talking about, I knew. and I knew about because I'm self-educated, right? Like I'm a passionate learner.
Right.
So when I'm in something, I bury myself in it. I want to know everything and I'm obsessed with the brain. So I'm like the nerd that reads the medical journals and the research trials. You know, I love that stuff. So I just noticed, I was like, huh, they don't know anything that I don't know. And that was a big boost, you know? And then when I was 37, I decided to go to college. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was capable of doing college. I wasn't a particularly good student in high school. And that had been 20 years prior. So I didn't even know if I could, but I was like, oh, I'll just try it and see what happens. And I was really good at it, right? Because then I was sober and older and I did it really well. But by the time I got to my senior year, my intervention business was booming, right? Like I was traveling every week, flying somewhere in the country, doing an intervention, taking that person, flying them to treatment somewhere else. And then I'd fly home, either Kansas City or LA. I'd be home for 4 or 5 days and then I'd be right back on a plane doing it again. So I just couldn't put my whole business on the back burner to finish my senior year of social work school. Mm-hmm. That at that point also I realized I didn't even need, right? Because now I had built this business and I had a lot of confidence and I knew I could do it and I knew I could make way more money on my own than I would ever make working for somebody else. So that's where it all began. And it's just one little thing, just like your sobriety. One little thing leads to the next thing and your confidence grows in one way. And you just keep trudging and putting one foot in front of the other and keep showing up for yourself and keep doing the work. And it all comes together.
Where does the podcast Addiction Unlimited fit into your business?
In what way? In timeline?
I don't know if in timeline, I would imagine... You know, that's a business in and of itself. It's a very popular podcast. Is this something that you use to feed into your business the other way around? Is it independent of what you do? Like I have this business, but I also have this podcast.
Yeah, the podcast is definitely its own entity for sure, because it is its own business and it's not just a spoke on the wheel. It's its own wheel for sure. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. Especially when you start getting into all of those layers and really improving and growing and hitting numbers that the majority of podcasts will never hit, right? Like I'm in the top 0.5% at this point, you know, and quickly getting to the top 0.3, right? So it is a business and there are a lot of details that are required to really continue growing at that level. So yeah, it is its own entity. It definitely feeds into other pieces. You know, I have a coaching business, which ultimately I've always been a life coach, right? I was 2 years sober when I did my first life coach certification. That was something I was always interested in. I didn't know that I would do it as a business, you know, as my work, but I was always enthralled with personal development, which is probably also why I loved AA so much, because it fit right in that, that thing that I already loved. But yeah, the podcast definitely gives me exposure on a greater level, right? It gives me more reach, which is what I wanted when I did it. I was like, I want to talk to as many people as humanly possible, because people have some really weird ideas about what sobriety is, what it looks like, how hard it is, about AA and what it is. Like people think some really weird stuff. And I just want to let them know none of it is that weird.
Well, there are some weird things that are actually true. But yeah, I agree with you. I see a lot of people on Instagram that it seems to be flavor of the month right now to have master classes or to be a coach. What advice would you, because it seems like this was not a fly by night thing for you. If I'm hearing your story, this was slow go. This was, I'm just coaching people informally. That turned into something else. And then I went to school and I learned this. And then I read a medical journal that this slowly evolved into what you have now. I do see some people who are just jumping into it. If somebody's interested in this type of job, for lack of a better term, what would you coach them to?
On how to have longevity or build a business or
both. Like, how do you do this and it not be a fly by night?
Well, that is grit. Right. There's a certain personality that comes with, and a lot of people like to use the word entrepreneur when really they're probably a business owner, right? Or attempting to be a business owner. People like to use those words, but they don't really even have a business plan or know what they're doing, right? Like, then it's a hobby. And I think that's what you see really a lot of, is people get passionate. And I love that. I love that people are passionate and they want to help other people. And there's a place for all of that. You have to have a certain level of grit, though, to get through all the ups and downs of business at any level, right? What you're doing as a brand new business and what you're building, if your revenue is under $100,000 a year, you have to do very different things. Your problems are different. Your struggles are different. Your mindset struggles are different. When you start getting, you know, $500,000, $1 million in revenue a year, that's a whole different set of issues. And you have to be able to roll with all of that. And you have to trust yourself to figure it out, because it definitely is not easy, right? It's a shit show a lot of the time. You've got to trust yourself to get through that. And you have to have solid support in place, or you're not going to handle it, right? And this is where you'll have people. I know I've heard recently a podcast, a relapse not very long ago. I don't even know who it is. I just overheard some of my clients talking about it. I don't pay that much attention, to be honest, not to be a jerk, but I just am busy, you know, and I've been sober a long time. Like, I'm not listening to recovery podcasts, right? But you just have, you have to have your own recovery program and life program in place firmly, or you don't even have anything to teach or coach. You don't have anything to give somebody else if you are not in that process yourself.
You have so many complexities hearing your story, that I have no structure, but here's all the structure that I have. And I have, I'm an introvert, but here's all the people I'm working with. And I had the confidence to stand toe to toe with people with PhDs. There's just, there's these polar opposites here that's hard for me to get my head around. And as an introvert, I can identify.
Yeah.
But it seems like you quickly got some, maybe it's just because you're on your own so long, you had built that confidence, which I struggled with, still struggle with sometimes.
Yeah, it took a long time. You know, there are certain areas of my life I'm super confident in and others that I'm not, right? There's certain things that really interest me and there are certain things that don't interest me at all. So I don't necessarily develop those pieces of myself. And I think everybody has that to a certain degree, but yeah, it's, I mean, being an introvert really just means a couple of things. It just means I don't do small talk well, right? Yeah. Like, we're going to go deep real quick because I don't do small talk. I'm not even interested in small talk. And it means that as an introvert, you know, we recharge alone. Extroverts recharge on the energy of other people. Introverts recharge alone. I think people get this idea, if you're an introvert, that like you're fidgety and weird and uncomfortable. And I'm none of those things. I mean, I can talk your face off for the rest of your life, but I'm not going to be the person that walks up to you and initiates the conversation.
Yep, me too. It's hard for me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not the initiator. But if somebody talks to me, we could talk all day. You know, I'm not uncomfortable in that way. But yeah, introvert is just a different, and it's groups of people, right? So if I'm in a group of people, I have to connect to one or two other people.
Yes,
I have to have an intimate connection, right? I don't do, I'm not the extrovert that can talk to the whole group and, you know, be the life of the party. That's, I'm not that guy. I need to connect with one or two people on a different level, right? And that's where I get my comfort.
Yeah, I can so identify with that. My wife can go from person to person to person to person to person. And I can identify with that as much as when she has half a sip of wine and pours it out saying, I'm done. Both of those things, I cannot get my head around.
So weird.
It's the same thing. Angela, where can we find you?
Everywhere at Addiction Unlimited. Of course, the podcast, addictionunlimited.com, Facebook, Instagram, all at Addiction Unlimited.
And if you didn't write that down, don't worry. You're probably driving or taking your dog for a walk like me. Everything is going to be in the notes. I highly recommend Angela's podcast. I don't know if she needs me to help promote it, because if you find my podcast in the rankings, look up, and that's where you'll find Angela, way up. But she's done, she's had She's had people like Jill Teets, who's been on this show, who is absolutely wonderful. So you're going to get something great out of it. And for our female listeners, it is good to hear sometimes with what females go through, because this is just such a male-dominated thing. And consider her coaching. You've seen where her background's from. Angela, thanks for coming on. It was so great to talk to you again.
Matt, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And we'll see everybody next week. Bye, everybody.
You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.